So, Arden, studying climate change in this particular area at Wallops Island, how would you compare it to studying climate change and mapping the coast here in Delaware? You know, where's the need to study climate change on Wallops Island?
Wallops Island is, you know, really a next door neighbor to us, and we're part of the same system, which is the larger Delmarva Peninsula. We see the same kinds of processes of storms and tides and generally of sea level rise, the same kinds of in coastal environments and marshes and dunes and barrier islands. So there's a lot about what we know and understand about Delaware beaches and barrier systems that can help inform our understanding of this portion of the eastern shore that includes Wallops Island and adjoining Assateague and Chincoteague area. But that area around Wallops is particularly dynamic in many ways, much more so than even what we see along a Delaware shoreline, where we tend to have a lot of older Pleistocene headlands that provide sediment and a slightly higher elevation. Down around Wallops, it is very thin, low-lying, very dynamic barrier islands with very active inlets there. The inlet there at Chincoteague has been moving and migrating around such that they have to change the buoys on a fairly frequent basis just for the boaters getting in and out. And the whole area is being influenced by the growth on the southern end of Assateague Island, an area called Fishing Point that has been accumulating a lot of sand and sediment over the last 150 years. And that has influenced the barrier islands to the south from Wallops. Further south, they're part of what's called an erosion arc. And so we can see a very high signal to noise ratio in terms of the kinds of coastal processes. So Wallops area makes for a very useful natural testing environment for us because that signal of coastal processes, and that includes sea level rise and climate change, are so pronounced there that it makes it easier for us to identify those processes at work.
And can you talk about the types of technologies you used to demonstrate mapping the coast in front of the Virginia Governor and Secretary of Technology?
So last week was an exciting time where we spent the week prepping a whole host of our coastal geophysical mapping equipment that myself and my colleagues use in our sort of routine science endeavors along this and other parts of the coastline. And that included things like side scan sonar, sub-bottom profiling systems, ground penetrating radar, camera systems, multi-beam sonars. Those were all the kinds of sensing technologies. And the added component that I think was of great interest to the governor and the Secretary of Technology was that we were utilizing these sensor technologies off of robotic platforms. So we were using autonomous systems, aerial drones, autonomous surface vessels, basically autonomous boats, robotic boats, and underwater robotic systems, and even ground robotic systems. So all these sort of robotic platforms as our agents, basically like pickup trucks or taxi cabs, to get our sensors into the environment where we wanted to study. And we really need those kinds of enabling robotic technologies because it's really difficult to work in this sort of white cap zone, that little narrow strip of area where waves are breaking and coming onto the beach. And we found it difficult just to work in an environment where there were so many mosquitoes and things. It was, for my students and I, we were very much encouraged to get the robots launched and let them do the work while we could try to huddle away and hide ourselves from the attacking mosquitoes and other biting insects.
And you've used these technologies a lot over the last year. What made this particular assignment different?
We're coming at the tail end of what's been a long field season, stretching back to May, where we've been using various combinations of these technology to map for shipwrecks in the Great Lakes, or look for down plains in the Mediterranean, or map other portions of our coastal systems. And what made this unique was that we were trying to pull off coordinated air, land, and sea robotic operations, and that we had a variety of other sampling technologies going on as well. We were taking cores into the ground, we were running a quad ski, which is an amphibious ATV jet ski system. So what was unique about this is we had a one-day window for a demonstration where we were trying to operate and run as much of our equipment in a coordinated fashion that we could. So it was really, really concentrated. And usually when we go out and we're doing our science operations, we're kind of left to our own devices and our own challenges. And here we had, you know, many VIP eyes and ears upon us during it. So there was certainly a heightened level of challenge and tension associated with, you know, knowing that we very much had to perform and execute everything in a limited time window.
So coastal erosion and flooding have been talked about a lot lately, especially with the recent hurricanes that we've seen. Do you think that these hurricanes make it more important than ever to study and understand our coast?
I certainly think that the storms that we had in the last few weeks underscored and provided a heightened backdrop to the demonstration and the technologies and the need for the kind of studies that we were outlining last week. You know, we know that we are in the peak part, or just past the peak part of tropical storm season. The peak is normally about historically around September 10th or 11th. So we're still in a very active, what is historically typically a very active portion of the storm season, and it forced us to make some changes to our demonstration activities. We had really hoped to bring our medium-sized coastal vessel, the RV Daybird, down, but the conditions were just too rough for safe and effective operation. So we had to change some things around, and that was just from the activity of Hurricane Jose sort of hanging around offshore. And it was making big waves at the inlet and big surf on the beaches. But we also know that, particularly for this portion of the Mid-Atlantic Bight, so the Delmarva Peninsula and up through into New York Bight and areas, that traditionally, historically, it's nor'easters, not hurricanes, that are typically the more pressing and the more impactful storm. So having not one, not two, but three hurricanes spinning in the Atlantic, with a couple of them having the East Coast in their sights, certainly, you know, made us pause and consider the implications that has in the future. Because even if we didn't increase the intensity of storms, which many of the models and studies looking at climate change suggest, or even if we didn't lead to an increase in frequency of some storms, and there have been some suggestions that could be, even if we kept them the same, we know that year in and year out, we are increasing our risk at the coastline, because we tend to have more infrastructure, more people, more buildings that are in the way there. And at Wallops, there's somewhere north of $6 or $7 billion worth of infrastructure just on Wallops itself that is at risk of storms, be they nor'easters or hurricanes, and recurrent flooding and sea level rise, as are the adjacent communities of Chincoteague and the natural barrier shorelines of Assateague. So all the natural and the human-made landscape and infrastructure is at risk, and it was made very real for us, because, you know, we were, all of us in attendance were constantly looking at our phones, looking at updates for the weather to see what these storms were going to do. And knowing that it's really more nor'easters in this coast, you know, as soon as you then throw potential for hurricanes into the mix, that just increases the impact that we can have on these coastal resources.
And seeing the risks and the impact, can these studies help us work towards a solution for sea level rise and climate change?
Well, they're part of it. I mean, these are big and grand challenges that we face at the coastline, and with a number of really challenging societal questions that we still have yet to sort of address. You know, how will we be able to sustain a federal flood insurance program? Can we continue, you know, will we rebuild Houston? Absolutely. Did we rebuild in New Orleans? Yes. Can we continue to do that for many other smaller and coastal communities around the whole of the U.S.? I think we're really going to have to wrestle with that. Our piece of that, and it's a small but we feel a valuable component of it, is to have the baseline fundamental scientific studies that will inform that resiliency management effort. So before we can manage a resource for resiliency, we need to understand what that resource is, and we need to understand how it changes. And so our project goal is to do the fundamental baseline geological and physical oceanographic studies to understand where the sand moves along and across and within the barrier island system of Wallops and adjoining Chincoteague and Assateague. We need to know where the sand is coming from, where it's moving to, over seasonal, annual, and decadal to century scale time frames to be able to evaluate what sort of scenarios are more likely for the natural evolution of the coastline, because that tells us where we're going to have hotspots, where we're going to need to put the focus and effort for defenses, be they seawalls or groins or beach nourishment and the like. But before we can really, you know, have those informed management discussions, we need to understand, well, how is the system, how has it been evolving, and how might it continue to evolve? And that's where we come in, is to do that base level and recurrent mapping investigation, both on the beach and the offshore, measuring the waves and the currents, getting samples of the sediment to know what sediment types are there and how they move around from place to place.
So when you process your data as you would, you know, anytime you go out and map the coast, how much insight do these kind of results typically give into climate change and sea level rise and beach erosion?
Probably for every hour that we have in the field, there's probably 100 hours that we spend back in the lab processing and analyzing and interpreting and reprocessing and reanalyzing, interpreting our data. The demo was just that. So it was a very limited, you know, period of time and a limited little area that we were trying to operate. So we didn't get a great amount of the science applied data out of this, although we did get to experience how we can operate in this setting and to gather some little, at least tidbits of data on that. Going forward with the goal of running the, executing the larger project, which would be for a holistic mapping of the whole portion of Wallops Island to fill in the known gaps that we have in the maps and in our understanding, you know, that's going to take a couple of years just of intensive field effort by myself and colleagues and a squadron of student volunteers. And that then will provide the baseline, and then in response to storms, we'll be able to go out and reoccupy some of those mapping areas. That's how we'll be able to actually get the delta where we start to look at changes. Because you have to have a baseline map, and we know we don't have that yet here. But then a base map is just that. That's just a frozen moment in time. What we're really interested in is that change through time, the dynamics, the morphological dynamics of the coastal system that tells us really where the sand goes from one area to the other. So once we've mapped it once and can map it several times after storm events and seasonal conditions, then we'll be able to basically do the addition and subtractions. And we'll see the areas where sand is building up and we'll see the areas where it's being eroded away from. And once we can, that allows us to sort of build the patterns. And those patterns show us the flow of sediment through the system, because especially with barrier island systems, sand is constantly flowing in and through and over them as part of their natural evolution. And we need to get a sense of not only qualitatively but quantitatively how much sand is moving from one place to the next, because that's really going to determine which areas are more rapidly eroding or are more vulnerable to storms and sea level rise and recurrent flooding.